expensive smooch. I hope you're all ready to go down under to Australia today, just a short hop over from New Zealand. I hope you've packed your sunnies and your swimmers because it's going to be a hot trip. Today's mission, we're going to go back to 1986's Crocodile Dundee. I am Smooch Director Annette Weirstra, and traveling with me to the Outback and to New York City, I've got two agents joining me, including a brand new agent of Smooch. Hello, Deb Stanish. Welcome.
Hello, Annette. Thank you so much for allowing me to join this tour.
I'm very excited to have you on board with us. And do you want to tell our listeners, because it's your first time, where we can find you?
Well, you can find me at our Doctor Who podcast, Verity Podcast, and also I do a beginner's hockey podcast called Beginner's Puck, when both of those are with, familiar with somebody named Erica Ensign, who does a lot of podcasting, and she's my podcasting partner for Beginner's Puck and one of the six Verities that we podcast for Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. And the reason we know each other, because she is the one that has lured me into podcasting.
Was it? Yeah, Eric is like that a little bit.
Yes, you do. You meet her and she's going to make you be on a podcast.
But sometime. I can say I lured Erica into podcasting. So that is my claim to fame.
So we'll credit you for creating Erica, who then created
yes.
Erp Chirp with me, which is our Winona Earp podcast.
There you go.
And we also have Jean McDonald with us, who is a regular agent. Hey, Jean.
Yeah. Hi. And I just want to promote my own Canadian content, which is our Orphan Black podcast called Sestracast. If you haven't watched Orphan Black, that's what got me hooked into podcasting. And I never knew like podcasts are like mushrooms.
They
and
are.
You have like four.
That's true.
Let's get into Crocodile Dundee, 1986. This is one of those movies where I haven't seen in a really long time, and you just wonder, what is it going to be like watching this movie?
I don't think I've seen it since 1986.
Me neither.
Yeah. That was a ride, wasn't it?
Yeah. Let's talk about the general feelings about this movie. Let's start with our newest agent, Deb.
I have to say, I was really worried about rewatching this because I do have very fond memories of both this movie and of the 80s. It was a very good decade. And this was huge. Like, Australia Mania was a big thing. And I really, thinking back on this, I'm like, oh, that was kind of a fun movie. And I just, I remember the scandal of Linda Kozlowski and Paul Hogan, falling in love while filming this and causing that very messy divorce. It did not age well. you kind of expected, a little bit of the misogyny just because it is the 80s and we have moved on. We're much more enlightened people now. But it was like really homophobic and racist and all sorts of all the other isms that you want to kind of throw in there. And it was uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable to watch, which kind of makes me happy because it means that we've evolved as a species, hopefully. There was a few scenes that were like, okay, now this is the romance of it. I could pick that up, but I didn't enjoy it as much as I was hoping. I think I was right to be a little afraid of this one, but it is certainly a marker in time. And I think it really, you want to talk about something that highlights Australia. I don't think this is the best example of highlighting Australia, but it certainly put Australia maybe a little bit more firmly on the map for a lot of people. So, you have to give it that.
How about for you, Jean?
Well, I think I second what Deb has said. Did not age well at all. I mean, there's 80s movies that I go back to and I still like, with a few cringes. But this one is like cringes with a few moments of like, oh, yeah, I guess I thought Paul Hogan was a lot more cuter and hotter when I was in my 20s. And now I'm just like, whatever, He's like, all I could think of, honestly, the whole time was thinking, he wears the same clothes throughout the movie and he washes his own clothes in this bathtub. And I don't see anybody going like, ooh, you know, he kind of stinks, because that's what I was thinking. I don't know where it comes in the podcast vacation series, but, you know, we watched a movie set in India from not super long ago. And there were things where we were like, oh, it's kind of hard to totally enjoy this movie when you're a little bit more or a lot more sensitive to some of the social and discrimination issues that are going on. So I guess what I could say overall is I was expecting it to be worse.
I was hoping for it to be better, but it didn't have the charm to elevate it above the problems.
Yeah.
Which, like,
yes.
Is a problem.
Yeah. 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 It's kind of a snooze fest ultimately, like, you know, come on. But I still enjoyed seeing Australia. I would say, like, more Australia, less America, like, from a vacation point of view, only because as much as I love New York City, it was not the New York City that I love to hang out in, although he definitely captured why I would never move back there. Just seen on a sidewalk where you can't, like, even get on the sidewalk without bumping into people, and, you know, there was...
It just seems like the worst thing right now. Yeah. Watching crowds on TV, I'm just like, let's all go to the Outback and have that space. I wasn't super invested in this movie and whether or not we still liked it or not, because I remember it and I feel like it had a kind of a big cultural impact, especially like Deb said, around Australia, and really, and I do still have fond memories of seeing it, like really feeling like getting to know what the Outback was in Australia. But I never found Paul Hogan or Mick Dundee, he was never attractive to me. He was like, yeah, and then now I'm watching this, I was like, yeah, I was right to be not attracted to him. But yeah. I think because I grew up with Australian relatives, so I have family in Australia, so the whole concept of Australia was very alluring, and eventually I did go see it and visit it, but I feel like in real life it is much, well, it's just a lot more than the Outback, which is the only thing we really see in this movie.
But, yeah. This movie could have benefited from drones or whatever, like, you really don't, that could have been filmed a lot of places. It was, you know, filmed in Queensland, but it was definitely, you know, it's people walking around in the foliage of the Outback, and also, you know, bodies of water where crocodiles may or may not live. And it didn't give that sense of, like, the vastness of the Outback, which I was missing.
The one thing it does do very well is sort of that fish out of water scenario, which is a really classic trope. So you have the fish, our heroine being the fish out of water in Australia. You know, Sue is, did anybody else cringe when she, like, walked into that water? I'm like, you never walk into strange bodies of water.
And I wasn't even thinking about crocodiles. I was just thinking of Giardia or something. I was like, you're filling your bottle up here.
I feel like she was being smarter than that.
Yes.
And so it was, it felt out of character for her to, like, forget where she was and just walk into the water. It was
simply an excuse for her to drop her skirt so we could see, like, her little one
also,
piece of
her butt. Yeah.
Who wears that?
Nobody.
It was, to me, that was like, this is such a male gaze movie, because there is no way that a woman
would wear that and sweat. And, yeah.
Like, hiking in the Outback.
With a
stuck up, your crotch.
I don't think so. Yeah, no woman designed that outfit.
But then they flip it, and then you have Mick in New York City and playing, like, to the worst of the New York City tropes, and just, I mean, him being looking. But the clothes were great. Like, the 80s
it was very
really
80s.
Yeah,
like,
so
those the shoulder pad,
shoulder pads. I put that in my notes.
Like, yes, and some of her outfits were stunning. Yeah. So she had a few dresses.
She had a snood. I'd forgotten about snoods.
Yes.
Ladies were so much fun for clothes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think of anything, like, the joyful trip was back to the 80s, you know, like, just to see, the clothes and the attitudes and like, oh yeah, that's, and the cars and the. Mm-hmm.
And I think we're far enough gone from the 80s that you can really appreciate the fashion yes. again, where it's not like, oh, I can't believe we wore that horrible. Now you're like, no, it was awesome.
Right. And her hair was great. Like she had great
the hair.
Yes.
Her hair was fabulous. Yeah. But she wasn't a particularly likable character, which I thought, I didn't remember her not being as likable. I just remember her being like kind of cool lady reporter type. But mm-hmm. I thought, oh, you know, you have absolutely no problem cheating on your fiance and then taking the guy that you almost cheated on your fiance with back to New York to like hang out with your fiance. Like, is that a little weird?
Mm-hmm. It was weird because you just, I didn't get her and her boyfriend. Was it Richard?
Yes. He's that guy. He is that guy in every movie.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. So Mark Bloom is his name. And sadly, he just recently passed away from coronavirus related illness. But the year before, I don't know if they were filmed, you know, in this sequence, but 1985 was the year of Desperately Seeking Susan. Mm-hmm. And if he played the husband, the jacuzzi, you know, the jacuzzi king of New Jersey. And I thought, oh, he's Gary again. Like, he's like that guy who is clueless about the woman, you know, who he's with wanting to explore more things and thinks he's so great because he has money and he has those white collar kind of pinstripey dress shirts and the ties of the 80s, mm-hmm. like the 80s guy.
Oh, yeah.
I hate those.
Yeah, that was very popular. And from everything I know, you know, of my reading of entertainment stuff. So most recently, the thing I saw him in was HBO story with the family who are billionaire media moguls. And he was in that. He was, you know, he's much older and he was a different kind of character. But Succession. Thank you. IMDb. So Succession, he had a really good part in, and that's, we're talking like 25 plus years later, you know, the guy was definitely
still doing the same,
doing the stuff, you know, like he's out there. I think like other actors, you know, really appreciated him and admired him, and he was nothing like the character he is in Crocodile Dundee, but he's good at playing that character.
Yes, very good. He always seems to fall back into that, but yeah, it was kind of a movie filled with a lot of unlikable people.
Is it wrong that I sort of liked, but I sort of liked how both Mick and Richard were playing off on two sides of the worst kind of toxic masculinity. I'm like, okay, you're so, Richard's like rich city guy who just wants to throw money down and like sort of his form of power is like going to a restaurant and humiliate you. And Mick is that, you know, the same sort of thing, but he's that outback
making you eat gross stuff.
Yeah, let's eat gross things. Let's like sort of like make you feel like you can't succeed without me and I need to be the big strong protector. And, you know, clearly he was a poacher and not just, you know. And so there's just like two forms of contrasting toxic masculinity. I'm like, well, I guess if you have to choose between the two of them. That's
it. And what does it say about Sue that this is who she's attracted to?
I know, Sue.
Well, like, girl, you need like a sit down and have some girlfriends like smack some sense into you.
I was gonna say she needs the psychiatrist. She needs to go into analysis and get her daddy issues sorted out. I mean, and really the contrast there, that's a really good way of thinking of it. Annette and I hadn't really thought of it exactly like that, but it's like the guy who will order in Italian, and I'm pretty sure when the waiter said like, "Your Italian is very good, sir," was being sarcastic, but he wouldn't know that. And the guy who would like, who has a move to knock you out, you know, like, you know, sort of surreptitiously knock you out, like the physical violence side. So it's like, oh, great.
He totally punched him at dinner.
He totally punched him.
So like any sympathy we might have had for you is gone because that was just super douchey too. Like, I mean, we all wanted to punch Richard. But we don't.
No, But in 1986, I think we didn't care.
Yeah.
I don't think we did. Yeah. Did this give anybody like huge nostalgia feelings for like newspapers and budgets writing?
Well, the most unrealistic thing about the movie is that she would get all that money for one article and fly them back and drive in limos and stay in these fancy hotels. It's like, not
well,
real.
I mean, at least they did bring in the father, you know, character and say like, oh, she's not just your girl reporter who worked her way up from like a hard scrabble working class journalist background. She's a kid with the silver spoon who is working at daddy's company, and of course nobody's going to question her travel budget.
Right, exactly. But still.
It is from a different era completely, because you know, we just don't have newsrooms like that to that extent anymore.
That's true.
Or even that type of in-depth article writing on something that's not a major breaking news story. You know, let's go find this dude in Australia who got bit by a crocodile and write like a weeks-long exposé on his life. Like, what? Mm-hmm. That's blogging, man.
That's right. I thought it was interesting that it was Newsday, the newspaper, which is actually the Long Island newspaper. Though, of course, they have offices in New York City, but why would Newsday, of all the tabloids, send somebody to Australia? Well, she wanted to go to Australia and stay in the Park Hyatt. I'm pretty sure that's the hotel where the movie opens that overlooks the Opera House.
Yes,
and
it was clearly in the background.
Bridge. Mm-hmm. And I would like someday to go there. I've been saving up travel points just for one night in that hotel.
There you go. But there was the scene at the end where, and that's the only scene that I would watch again, that did have that element of very classic romance movies where you have the scene in the subway and it's really crowded and they're yelling back and forth. And it's just like one of those feel-good moments that... That kind of stuff periodically does happen in real life, and it's just like kind of magic. That was great, except I could not really fully appreciate it because adult me, not young me, who watched this a million years ago in the movie theater, kept thinking she kicked off her shoes and she is running barefoot through the streets in New York City, and now she is running down the subway steps in New York City in her bare feet. Anybody who's been on the subway in New York City is thinking that is like sepsis waiting to happen. I just like, how much money did they pay her to do that? Because her feet are black. Like, if she's running, you can see. And like, it was so distracting to me. It did not come across as like romantic and dashing. It came across as like, girl, put your shoes on. What are you thinking?
It's true. But I love that that's what distracted you.
It did. This is not even like cleaned up New York. Like, Times Square is, you know, kind of really Disney-fied at this point. Like, this is gritty Times Square and New York with like glass on the streets and everything. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, no. I kept thinking, did they have somebody sweep in front of her before she ran? Probably. Like, how did they do that? Like, I was thinking the production notes. Like,
yeah.
Linda Kozlowski must run three blocks in bare feet. Where's the
extra on this? I found sometimes I was going the whole fish out of water thing, that I was going, well, I know he's from the outback and hasn't spent time in a city, but come on, doesn't everyone know what prostitution is? Like, would he be so naive he wouldn't know that? And there was a couple of things where I'm just, yes, he's new to the city, but he also seems to be a pretty savvy, smart person. So I didn't entirely believe everything he was naive
Escalators.
About. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know. Yeah. I don't know.
So, but maybe I'm jaded.
But the prostitution thing, especially because...
They have
that in small towns, especially small towns in the, you know, frontier of, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the only women he would
Every frontier.
Know.
Every frontier.
Yeah.
That was sort of dorky, that's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it did let him beat up a guy twice and also see that prostitutes had a heart of gold because... they said, we might have to give you a free one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it's like, nah, he's not that cute.
It's not. It's not that... It was very cringy, very cringy.
Cringy, speaking of not that cute. So what, the scene in the plaza where the maid comes in with the towels, and it's like, oh, she's Mr. Meek, can I have your towels? First of all, you know, mimicking Hispanic mm-hmm. maid. And when Linda Kozlowski does that thing with her bare leg in the bathroom, I couldn't remember what happened next. Like, I didn't remember that she was still technically fully dressed, although we know she has a lot of options with the clothes she has for looking pretty naked. I thought, is she going to, like, come on to him now? Like, this movie is all, has me all at sea with what is going on. But even though it ended up being a joke, you know, and he gets to have the great line, like, oh, you know, giving room service a whole new meaning. Again, cringe. So... whatever. It's like...
yeah, I definitely think this movie would have benefited from having a clear point of view from Sue's perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, what yeah. is it? Was she looking to break free of her father? Right. Was she looking to make a name for herself? Was she looking to get out of a bad relationship? She just seemed to sort of aimlessly wander through this and let things happen. And then yeah. at the end, even the revelation that, like, she's in love with Mick, it wasn't... It maybe we've just been Hallmarked movie into thinking like we need that big, big, giant sort of climatic scene. And we really never got that. We had the engagement, him just like kind of wandering out.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even, you know, the confrontation. You never even had that moment of confrontation where maybe she could see something in herself or make a realization. It was just kind of like her going, huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. We didn't really. How did she get from, you know, the dinner party to the subway station?
Right. It wasn't, you know, it just felt like we missed something. Like there wasn't, there's not a whole lot of inner life to her. And I think you kind of need that.
Do you think it's because this, I think, ultimately was written to be a story about Mick Dundee?
Yeah.
And not, it like, it is sold as kind of a romance and a comedy, but I feel like she is actually kind of almost immaterial to the story, because I want to like her, but she just sort of, it, like as you say, she kind of floats along and doesn't have a lot of drive, but it is really, it's his story and his journey, and we see like his emotional reactions to things and
it is his movie. Like, he wrote it. And
he did write it. It was his concept.
It's an Australian production, even though, you know, it has American setting and actors. And it is still, to this day, the most, the highest grossing movie, Australian movie in history.
Oh, wow.
So it kind of tells you a lot about, like, well, Australian movies aren't really... making big bucks over here.
Australia.
Yeah, right. I know. I mean,
again, going back to the idea of the male gaze too. If it's his movie, this is obviously in his mind, like the ideal woman. Like I'm poaching this fabulously, wonderfully wealthy woman away from a life of luxury and ease, and she wants a real man, and I am that real man. So classic male fantasy.
Yes.
Not original at all.
At the end, I'm still wondering, well, what happens? And I realize there's sequels to
there's
this.
There's sequels.
Like, how does this work? So she seems pretty invested in her career and stuff, and he seems like he's not going to be the kind of guy who wants to live in a city. So how are we going to make this work? And I like, from a romance perspective, I didn't really buy that.
Yeah.
I feel like they might have been in lust with each other, because sure... but were they actually in love? Like, what was their common ground? What was the thing bringing them together? And it, like,
she felt safe with him, Annette.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that what all women want? I always feel safe with you, Mick, is what she says.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
I mean, I read ahead on Wikipedia for the sequel, and it's ridiculous.
I feel like I watched it at some point, but I don't really remember. I do feel like it was bad.
I'm pretty sure I've never seen it, but
there's a drug cartel involved, of course, and
apparently there's two sequels, because there's also Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles, which I definitely haven't seen.
And then I heard that there was a 2020
thing,
but it's more like a real live, because everybody's every actor in it's playing themselves. Because apparently, wasn't he involved in like some giant tax scandal or something?
Yes.
And it may have played into that. I don't know. I didn't care enough to delve into it, but
I cared a little bit more. I didn't actually watch so there was a trailer that was released recently touting a new sequel to Crocodile Dundee with Crocodile Dundee Jr.
Oh, that scares me.
from what I read, it was actually like a tourism thing, and I just was like, well, I'm not going to watch it right now because I need to focus on the topic at hand of 1986, and I don't want to get mixed up.
Oh, I'll look for it and put it in the show notes.
Yeah, it was something. Yeah. But he's, you know, he's 80. He was 47 when this movie came out. And I think Linda Kozlowski was like 27, maybe?
Yeah.
Or 28. Like, she was almost 20 years younger than him, which is, you know, kind of creepy in and of itself. But yeah, so this is, what is it? I just pulled up the very excellent Mr. Dundee, an upcoming 2020 Australian comedy film.
God.
It's going to be released to Amazon Prime Video on July 17th. I think we have to watch it.
Well, if that happens, we will watch. You know what we'll do? We'll watch it and do a drunken commentary with it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we'll drink Foster's or something. Well, yeah, I'm all for the tipsy commentary.
Yeah, we're pretty good at those tipsy commentaries now.
There you go. So what do you think? I mean, is this something, can we maybe find a better Australian movie to recommend on our world tour?
Well,
you know, go to Australia instead.
There you go.
Well, yeah.
Someday.
When they let you back in.
Yeah. I would like to point out, you know, the one scene with the Aboriginal tribe and his friend David, who was at the time the most famous Aboriginal actor in Australia, I think, David Gilpilil. I can't say his name right, probably, but when I saw him, I was like, oh, that's David. He's also a character named David in my favorite of all time movies, which is Until the End of the World. And that movie is a long movie, a travelogue movie, you know, hopping from country to country. But then the second half of it all takes place in the Australian outback. And David is in it. And also in Crocodile Dundee 2, they apparently bring in another famous original Aboriginal actor, Ernest Dingo. And so I would kind of like to see it just to see him. But I know the good Australian movie, if you haven't seen it, is The Sapphires. Has anybody seen that? Which is about a girl band. So I was on my way to Australia for the first and only time that I went there, and looking at the movie selection, and I thought, well, I'd like to watch an Australian movie. And the gal sitting next to me was Australian, and she said, well, this movie, The Sapphires, is really good. And I was like, okay, you know, it's a long flight. I can watch four or five movies by the time I get there. And it is set in the 60s about an Aboriginal girl band, sort of a la, you know, Diana Ross and the Supremes, you know, that mode. And they answer an ad they want to make a band and go to Vietnam to perform for American troops. And Chris O'Dowd is their manager. Anyway.
That sounds fun.
It's very delightful. Fun. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much you see of Australia from a vacation perspective. I still recommend Until the End of the World for that. But it was really good. So just putting that out there.
Sounds like a good recommendation.
I'm going to plug Miss Phryne Fisher, Mysteries.
Oh, yeah.
are set in Melbourne and are like that's very Melbourne, old. Yeah, like 1920s Melbourne. And then they also have the modern Miss Fisher, which is not as good as the original series, but still is fun, still in Melbourne, but in the 1960s. Those both make me very happy. And again, not necessarily your best vacation version of Australia, but
Since we can't travel to the 1920s.
Yes.
Does it make you happier than Crocodile Dundee? That's the question.
I've watched that whole series I don't know how many times. It is one of my favorite things.
And realistically, I mean, vacation, right? You're supposed to feel good about things. Mm-hmm. Not exactly. Ponder upon toxic masculinity and problematic.
Oh, can I throw in one more Australian movie that I adore? Muriel's Wedding.
Oh, have you seen that? That's a classic.
That's like a classic, just good. And of course, Toni Collette, that's like maybe not her first movie, but the first movie I saw her in. Mm-hmm. But she lives on the Gold Coast of Australia, like her family, and live in a place called Porpoise Spit, which is possibly my favorite place name in a movie ever.
I have not seen that for a very long time.
Oh,
it's been ages. I think that was like the first movie that like really made her a name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
How about you, Deb? Do you have any?
I don't. I'm really feeling like I need to like delve into something that's going to bring me more Australian joy than what this is. I may have to ask. We have on Verity, we have a resident of Hobart, Australia, Tansy. So I'll have to ask her for some recommendations of things. I'm sure there's probably a lot out there that we don't get in this part of the world that is maybe a little more localized. So I'm going to ask her for some recommendations now because it's the pretty parts of it, I think, could be there has to be more out there that just highlight that part of Australia and without, you know, janky thongs.
The thing I do like about streaming services, though, is that it does seem to be opening up more stuff because in Canada we get a lot of American things and our own stuff and some British. But I find now that we have streaming, you're getting access to a lot more countries in terms of what they're producing. So,
yes, break down all those digital borders.
Exactly. Any final thoughts before we move on from Australia?
Yeesh. I'm ready to move on from Paul Hogue.
It's like, we could stay in Australia for a little longer and put our feet in the ocean.
The Australia bits were nice, but like then there were people in it, and that's where it got a little shady.
So what we need to do is leave behind the 80s portion and just keep the Australia portion.
Yeah. I didn't remember until I knew there was a sequel and I thought, oh, the first one's all in Australia and the second one is in New York, but it's not like that at all. So I would have liked it a little better.
We can keep the fashion, though. I thought the clothes were fun.
Yeah, the clothes are great.
Keep the clothes.
The clothes were good. Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, well, we'll stay for a while and try and find the good parts of Australia. And then we'll push on to our next stop. Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network, where you can find many great pop culture podcasts. If you're enjoying our show and our virtual vacation, please tell your friends or leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us on Twitter at Agents of Smooch. And you can become a member of the Incomparable Network at theincomparable.com. Our members get some fun extra perks, including our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. And until next time, agents, stay safe.